It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Glad to be here and a part of the big show for Dory. The U.S. is warning against travel to 80% of the world due to the coronavirus. I feel like at that point you just say, don't travel, right? Don't visit 80% of the world's countries due to risks from the coronavirus. The advisory is up against international travel, and they haven't had these advisories up since, what, almost a year, I guess, since August of last year anyway. It's not a formal advisory, they say. Instead, it's the State Department. They're going to use Center for Disease Control and Prevention standards assessing health and safety guidelines for individual countries. So 80% of the countries will be labeled do not travel. And they're also discouraging travel for the other 20%. So in essence, we're still saying don't travel. It's strange, too, because I feel like does that include if you're vaccinated? And if it does, then what's the point of the vaccination? How does that work? At what point is it going to be okay for that traveling again? But I tell you, if you're in the airline industry or the cruise ship industry, you got to look at this and just weep, because it's going to be harsh. And we've been talking for years now about how we're more globally connected, interconnected community with people moving back and forth, and travel easier and better than it has been in years. How far is this going to set us back in that? You know, what's the long-term impact of the airline industry there? I'll tell you what, it can't be good. Also, I don't think people are going to entirely follow it. People need to travel. They have friends, relatives, loved ones. They have plans and dreams, and life is short. And it can get shorter, but people have to take those risks sometimes. I know if I got sick, I'd rather be here than virtually anywhere else. But, you know, there's a certain point where people say this is the time of my life when I have a chance to travel. For a lot of people, you know, maybe retired people, they're thinking it's their only chance to go. And I think, you know, people have to be able to assess those risks for themselves. Next up, the Motor City Madman is making the news. He got a bit of COVID. And this has been kind of a shocker for Ted, who once dismissed the idea of COVID. Let's play cut one from Nugent.
The 19th of April, 2021, during cluster pandemic, Chinese virus attack 21. I was tested positive today. Boy, I got a stuffed up head. Body aches. My God, what a pain in the I literally can hardly crawl out of bed the last few days. But I did. I crawled. I don't look like I've been crawling, do I? So I was officially tested positive for COVID-19 today.
Okay. So, you know, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, is you know, this is Nugent, what, 2 days ago, I think, on Facebook?
Yep, 2 days ago.
And, yeah, and so here's Nugent on the ABC affiliate in Florida yesterday.
There's been worse conditions and health problems in the past in this country and around the world where nobody ever shut down mom-and-pop diners and shut down entire economic societies in the United States of America. That's what I believe, and I will continue to believe, that that's a hoax. But the pandemic is real, and the people that are sick are real.
Okay, so basically what people are saying is Motor City Madman has called the pandemic a hoax in the past. Now that he has had COVID, he says, you know, people told him not to say anything, but he had already posted on Facebook that he had it, and it was really brutal. He could barely crawl out of bed. And now they're saying, look at that hypocrisy. Now, I'm not a particular fan of the Motor City Madman, not a fan of his music and his overall style of communication. has been problematic. I've interviewed him a few times. But here's the thing. There's a lot of people that don't speak precisely, especially if you are not a political figure. And, you know, and this is part of the danger of the internet, too, for people who don't have the celebrity status of Ted Nugent. You know, Ted's going to be fine, whatever he says. But when people say, hey, this is a hoax, oftentimes they're using sloppy language, like Nugent is. So it's possible they're not saying that the COVID situation isn't spreading, that there's not a disease. You know, there are people who believe that nonsense, too. But, you know, people will use a blanket statement and they won't go into the specifics. One, because it's shorthand for something and they haven't been pressed to explain it. They're just kind of emoting. They're saying, I'm mad about this. Here it is. And what they're really mad about is what Nugent's saying there is, hey, you're shutting down mom and pop stores. While Costco and Walmart and others are open, they're already having a tough enough time competing with them. And basically, you're dooming them to failure. And you're going to make it so that they can't function. And they'll be out of business and they'll lose their retirement and their livelihoods and everything else. And people say, well, that's a hoax. That's a crock. You know, but it gets distorted. And unless you do the follow-up questions, which nobody really wants anymore, you really don't know how far people are. You know, if they're out to lunch or if they've got a point and people want it, you know, cut and dried. So, you know, again, so there'll be those pointing to this saying, oh, Motor City Madman, it's all proven to be false, just ridiculous. And to a certain degree, maybe they're right, but to a certain degree, Nugent's right, right? Because, you know, there are small businesses, there are people who've had invested their whole lives and their hopes for their family and their future into these operations that are going to go out because there's a lot of officials that are saying you don't have the right to assess risk at this point. You know, and I get it early on when you don't understand the disease, there's not vaccines out there. I get those dangers, but I think that we're undercutting the authority of healthcare and the authority of politicians in biohazard emergencies based on how we're responding to people under COVID, because God forbid something worse comes along and people eventually get sick of being told what to do and just start ignoring people, which is, I think, increasingly a strong danger. So next up in the Fastest 15, sleeping 6 hours or less can lead to dementia. A new study published in the Wall Street, the stories published about the study in the Wall Street Journal. Middle-aged adults who sleep 6 or fewer hours a night are at a higher risk of developing dementia in later life, a new study suggests. Age 50 to 60 who regularly slept 6 hours or less each night were more likely than those who slept 7 hours to be diagnosed with dementia. And it wasn't small. After controlling for cardiac, metabolic, and mental health issues, the study researchers found that 50-year-olds who were sleeping 6 hours or less a night had a 22% higher risk of developing dementia later in life. 60-year-olds were 37% more likely to develop the disorder. This is a nightmare for me because I never sleep. The comparisons were with people who slept for 7 hours each night, and they were attached to electronic devices to make sure that they were reporting accurately. In other words, they kept track of the time they were actually asleep. So, you know, sleep deprivation is bad for your health. Now, you know, as somebody who spent a lot of my career in morning radio, I can tell you that this, you know, this is, I guess I'm doomed, you know. And I know, you know, Nicole and Nicole Thompson, you know, usual producer of the Dory Monson Show, Chris Martin, today's producer of Dory's show, you guys are in trouble because I know what morning radio has done and how long you didn't have sleep.
What time did
so
you
in
use,
the radio business?
What time did you used to get up disaster. when you did the morning show? What time were you getting up?
Oh, 2:30.
Yeah, you
know, I mean regularly.
Everybody in the news department is used to getting up at 2:00, and it's got to be horrible for you.
Oh yeah, and you just feel the weight of it, you know, like. And by the way, nobody cares. It's, I mean, you know, woe is me, I guess, first world problems, but you know, you can try if you have to get up at 2 or 2:30 for your job, you want to get to bed. Let's say you get to bed at 8:00, you know, and it's sunny out still in the summer for several more hours and people are moving about the house. You know, even if you go to bed at 8:00, you've got a maximum, if you're getting up at 2:00, you've got a maximum of 6 hours. Right. So, you know, you're still in the hazard zone for the survey for dementia. But my experience was, you know, if you go to bed at 8:00, people look at you like, oh, great. You know, now there's no evening at all. This is lame, you know. Or if you try to go to bed after you get home. And so let's say you sleep from noon to 8:00 or noon to 7, then people wonder, well, who's that lazy bum in bed all day? You know, so there's no winning. You basically just, you know, you sleep whenever you can, you catch naps when you can, and then when you're finally moved to a different shift, you suddenly realize, wow, you know, there's colors with brightness, and you feel this weird phenomenon of energy that you wouldn't feel in any other circumstance.
So do you feel like you have slowly encroaching dementia?
Thank God. I've got too many kids I got to watch right now and take care of. So, but when I, you know, it's a funny thing. Ever since I had kids and, you know, since I'm older, I calculate how old they're going to be when I'm in 20 years, how old I'm going to be. Every time I see something that indicates a greater likelihood of death or disability, it scares me. Whereas things like that did not used to bother me, because now I just think I need to live this long to make sure that my kids are okay. That's my big focus. Next up on the Fastest 15, a new book from Vice President Mike Pence is going to proceed, even though the employees wanted it stopped. Now, this is one of those things that you look at and you say to yourself, is there no shame anymore amongst individuals who used to talk about freedom of speech and the desire for everybody to have their point of view expressed? And now the go-to is finding some sin. In this case, Pence isn't friendly enough to the LGBTQ community, and therefore anything that Simon & Schuster does to proceed with this book, according to this petition circulated by employees, is a backdoor support or an indirect support of perpetuating white supremacy. You know, first of all, we got to get a handle on this, because I think this is a dangerous thing for society and a dangerous thing for debate. If you define everybody who disagrees with you about big issues, including issues that offend you, as hate, or as perpetuating white supremacy, what you're really doing is saying, I don't want any debate, because you're trying to make everybody who disagrees with you so evil that there's no point in listening to them at all. You can't listen to them. You can't relate to them. You can't debate them. And there's no point in debating to them and debating with them, because by definition, they're just evil people. You know, it's like when New York had the horrifying experience of Franklin Graham's Samaritan Purse group showing up and providing free hospital tents and medical care to anybody in New York impacted by COVID. This is when the New York governor was sending old people back into old folks' homes who were diagnosed positive for COVID, you know. And so they open up these tents, and they say they're open to everybody. That's right, gay, trans, straight, whatever. And they're run out of Dodge, because they say, well, Franklin Graham's a hate group. He's a hater. They're a hater. And therefore, we want them out, and we're celebrating that they're on their way out of Dodge. You know, and I just want to point this out to people who still have the capability of thinking rationally, that if someone hates you, they don't provide you free medical care, right? If they hate you, it's very uncommon in the long, long, long line of human experience that someone who hates you and wishes you evil would pause and spend their own resources and time making sure that you had free medical care available to save your life. Right? That just doesn't happen. So whatever the case is, you might be offended by their point of view. You might despise the way that they object to what you view as a healthy sexuality and they view as unhealthy sexuality. Whatever the case is, you might despise them in all kinds of ways. Your feelings might be hurt by them, but it doesn't fit the definition of hate, right? There's something more complicated in human relationships. And, you know, there are people who, you know, you might despise in one area and might really appreciate in other areas. You know, this is where there was a great essay about small town life versus big town life. People in New York and other places say, I'm tough. I'm from New York. I can handle anything, you know, because I'm in this big city, you know, New York, Chicago, the tough area, Los Angeles. You know, these are the big cities, and, you know, you name it. That's where people are supposed to be toughened up and learn about these perspectives. But in small towns, whoever you live near, those are going to be your neighbors, and those are going to be the people you're going to rely on. And it's a long drive to anywhere, right? So whoever's next to you, whether they agree with you politically or you share the same outlook on religion, faith, sexuality, or whatever, you're going to have to deal with one another and get along. So the argument was that there's a, even though there's a greater diversity of ethnicity in the larger communities, it's the smaller towns where people actually learn to have to get along with each other in a more libertarian, small L fashion, where you just have to learn to disagree. You know, you might dislike something about your neighbor, but you might find that there's a different side of their humanity that you do like. And that nuance isn't allowed anymore in our political debates because it's all or none. You know, it's the other side's evil, my side's great. And, you know, it's not healthy. And in the long term, that's a bad sign. So the Pence book's going to proceed. That's good. Well, I say it's good. Most of the time, frankly, political books like this are a snooze fest. I'm often wondering, how is it possible to get so much money for them? Nancy Pelosi got millions of dollars for a book that sold, what, 2,300 copies or something? Ridiculous, you know? So I'm wondering who's paying for those books, first of all, you know, who's giving the advance, and whether or not there's a clamoring demand for a Pence book. But that's a different subject. Employees demanding it be stopped because they disagree with Pence, that's dangerous, I think. Next up, a woman in Hong Kong has lost $33 million in a phone scam. And, she is not previously running the Employment Security Department for Washington State. This woman has an excuse. She is 90 years old, and she was called by fraudsters in Hong Kong who convinced her to transfer her savings into various bank accounts. They managed to get just a pittance of it back. I mean, in Hong Kong dollars, it was $250 million, U.S. $32 million, and they ended up recovering $9 million Hong Kong dollars. I don't know what that is in U.S., but, you know, you're talking about roughly $2 million recovered out of $32 million or so. So very sad situation for her and a reminder. You know, I look at this and I think there's got to be a special place in hell for people, including the 19-year-old college student who the police did pick up in connection with the case, for ripping off older people, the elderly who've lived their lives and saved their money and made their wealth and whatever. And you know, they're trying to do the right thing, and they're responding in ways that they shouldn't. You know, you're just taking advantage of the senility, you're taking advantage of their lack of understanding of technology, and you're just stealing from them blind. It's just so awful. And it happens all the time, most of the time in smaller amounts. You know, I remember my grandma, before she passed away, told me about getting phone calls urging her to buy these light bulbs that were supposed to be for charity. And they were really aggressive, and they kept asking for information they wanted her to buy over and over again. And she said, I just can't afford it. I'm on fixed income. And I said, just, you know, give them my phone number next time, you know. But it was shocking to me how often it was that there was a feeling that they had to buy it. My grandma was a very sharp woman. I mean, she was smart. You know, for those of you who are left of center, she was a hardcore left of center person. But, you know, and I wasn't. But, you know, she was of nimble mind all the way, you know, into her 90s. But when it came to things like that, or phone calls and people requesting money and demands, for some reason, she'd give in to it. And it was strange because she was not the kind of person to give in. I don't know what that is, but it's something to watch for. And people need, you know, people that are vulnerable need protected, and the elderly need respected. So, you know, shameful. But, you know, look, she doesn't. People feel ashamed often when they've been ripped off and scammed. She can look at Washington State and say, at least I'm not as bad as Washington State's Employment Security Department. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Parallel. Here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Great news coming out of the city of Auburn, where the council voted to create a criminal penalty for camping on city property, one that would only apply to those who are homeless if shelter spaces open. This from the Seattle Times. Look, here's the thing. I was complaining on the air about Seattle homelessness at least a decade before it seemed like anybody noticed, because you know, I drive by what's commonly called the jungle, and I was pointing to all these tents in it, and nobody I traveled with ever noticed them. But I said, look, you look into the brush deep enough, and there's just tents popping up all over the place, and tarps. And at first, you know, they would usually be dark in color to kind of blend in. And then over time, when they realized they weren't going to be moved, it became more and more open, and you had more and more elaborate encampments, and they moved farther and closer to the freeway. Pretty soon, you had large, expansive encampments, you know, over the years, where suddenly it went all the way out to Boeing Field, and you had wooden structures out there. You had campfires, you know, at night, and it went all the way to the convention center, where, you know, you could see campers that had taken over part of the park there and were just dumping trash over the side. And, you know, you go to other parts of town and you see it too. In Tacoma, near Martin Luther King Way, there was a big park encampment on the sidewalks there, trash heaps everywhere. And it was ugly and horrible. And I'm seeing increasing numbers of these encampments and tarp encampments in the Tacoma area. You know, they've been taking some down, but it's hard to keep up. And I honestly think about this a lot, because it's such a blight on public space, and there's garbage that just piles up everywhere. There's usually, you know, the stolen grocery cart sitting there, which, you know, you might scoff at it, but it's not their property. We know it's not their property, and we know it's illegal to camp there, and yet it's there. And so Auburn does this. They pass this legislation making a criminal penalty for public camping on public space, or camping in public spaces. And it's criminal trespass, $1,000 fine, and or 90 days in jail. The previous civil penalty was $250. Odds of them getting the penalty are probably pretty low, right? So it's designed to send people a message that, hey, we'll try and get you some services, but we're not going to let you camp in Auburn. And it seems like the usual suspects show up to say, all right, you can't do this. This is bad because you're sending a bad message to people. Jonathan Hempel, member of the Lived Experience Coalition, who sits on the governing committee alongside Auburn Mayor Nancy Backus, said she didn't think a criminal penalty would encourage more people to accept services. Hempel said what's interpreted as refusing services is often a reflection of a lack of trust with the person offering the resources. Quote, this might be construed as them rejecting services when they don't trust you or the services you're providing. Please heavily consider the fact that the ordinance you're proposing might have a domino effect and might cause other cities to propose similar legislation without the lens you have. And the lens he's referring to there is one of the other council members pointed out, I think this is what he's referring to, Council Member Yolanda Trout-Manuel, who started the meeting, shared in the meeting that her family once experienced homelessness, you know. And whether other cities do without that lens or with that lens, and my guess is people in these other cities have experiences or have talked to people with experiences and can relate enough and empathize enough to figure out what some of the challenges are. That's why they're offering services and have various programs to help people find services. But what they're not willing to do is just surrender all the public space and let people just start piling up garbage and ruining your – it's not just your property values. That always sounds like a, you know, like some escapee from Caddyshack, you know, like Ted Knight in Caddyshack just saying, I don't want the riffraff around here. Come on. But, you know, you pay for your parks. You go there to relax, to enjoy, and suddenly you see a tarp encampment there. You don't feel as safe around your kids. The garbage is as evident. The needles are there. When these encampments are cleaned up, you know, it's going to cost, what, $10,000 to $15,000 per encampment to pick it up. Or at least that's what it was in Tacoma several years back. Or sorry, Puyallup several years back when they had the large sweeping encampments along the river. You know, and here we talk about the need to keep the rivers clean, you know, stop pollution. And then for some reason, if somebody shows up and claims they're homeless and they pile up garbage everywhere, people act like, oh, well, you know, that's different. You know, it's like we've lost the ability to have moral authority and confidence to say that's behavior that's not allowed. You know, And if anything, in Auburn, I think I'd go a step further if I could to say, hey, look, if we don't have a shelter for you, if we can't find you the services, here's what we'll do. You know, this is the city parking lot you can go to camp. You can't camp in any other public space at any time, but you can go here if we don't have access to that right now. And then we're going to find that service for you somewhere and get you there, you know. But I wouldn't leave it open-ended where they can just camp anywhere. You know, as I said, in Tacoma, I was driving along one street recently. I hadn't driven on it ever that I know of. And I noticed, you know, they had a large kind of green belt along one side. And, of course, if you look in there, I counted about 17 different encampments. You know, and it's hard to see from the road, but once you notice them, they don't go away. And then, of course, over time, you know, it wasn't long ago, you could see a big pile of trash and tarps piling up along the Highway 18 the highway into Gig Harbor, you know. And you see increasing numbers of, you can always tell, you see a trail and you follow the garbage and then you find the tarp. You know, it's not a good way to live. It's not good for other people. It's not healthy for the environment. Why are we going to have an environmental impact statement if we're going to allow pollutants of any kind to be everywhere there? You know, and so I think it's essential for the quality of life that this not be allowed. You know, it's wrong. And telling people, if you're worried about them trusting people with services, you better start encouraging them to trust people with services. My bet is if you have a choice between, you know, spending time in jail where you're not going to have the ability to go wherever you want, do whatever you want, versus accepting services, maybe people accept the services or move on. And I think that's the bet for Auburn. You know, again, it's a nightmare scenario that if you know, I went on a tour of the Tacoma Rescue Mission a while back, and the individual in charge there was talking to me about the trauma that most of the men generally had experienced before they arrived on the streets, you know, and most of them were abused as children. Most of them experienced, you know, savage abuse as children. And it's horrifying to think of because you wonder, you know, how strong of a life would you have if you experienced what these guys had experienced, you know, but you got to cut off that cycle somewhere. You got to put a stop to it and you got to get people to, to have a life of dignity. And they're not going to get it on the street. And they're not going to get it camping there. And you're not treating people, the other taxpayers, respectfully by just allowing blue tarps and encampments and garbage to control your cityscape, which is how Seattle's being perceived right now. David Bowe is in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe is in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. The happiest country in the world. Is the happiest country in the world the greatest country in the world? I think most Americans would dispute that, since it is not the United States that ends up being the happiest country, but Finland. Finland ranked the highest, the country with the highest amount of happiness according to the World Happiness Report. And this is for the, third year in a row? The Finns seem to be as surprised as anyone, considering the popularity of melancholy and their London-like weather every day. And yet, when people were asked a series of questions, and this was a survey of 350,000 people around the world, to talk about their level of happiness, the Finns responded with overwhelming positivity. The U.S. ranked number 14 on the list, behind Ireland, but ahead of Canada. Now, would you have guessed that in a million years? I would not have guessed that. I always perceived the Canadians as pretty happy people. You know, I didn't think the U.S. would be number one. First of all, people aren't very satisfied with what they have. There's always this kind of desire to go get more, and that becomes tough. And then, if you're spending more than you actually have to get that more, then you always feel that stress. So there's always going to be that. But I thought for Canada, that just it's, I know it's a stereotype, but it always seems like the Canadians are happy. They've got all the space in the world. I can't imagine there's not too many people who hate the Canadians, except for maybe Cartman of South Park, but that's it. So, you know, but again, U.S. can say we're number one in North America here because we're ahead of Canada. Now, they were trying to figure out what could be the cause. Why is, you know, why are the Finnish so much happier than the rest? And part of it, I think, is because, you know, as they point out here, in Helsinki, children as young as seven walk to school by themselves. They put backpacks on and they feel completely secure. And the Finns basically say, you know, they don't fear going out. They don't have the issues that other countries have, including the U.S., you know. And I think if you live in an environment like that, you know, where they have a relatively small population, culturally there's a lot of cohesion. There's not a big crime problem. The kids are safe. There's a lot of less, you know, that they don't have those same stresses. People look at that and say, well, why don't we emulate that here? And part of the issue is we couldn't, right? Because they have a fairly unique phenomenon and we're not, you know, we're not going to get that. We're not going to get to that point. We're far more diverse and geographically we have an expansive country, much greater than the Finns, obviously. And, you know, we have a wildly different culture.
There's some cuts of Finns explaining why, if you want to hear them.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, yeah. Play cut one there, Chris.
This is Alexi.
I suppose it's like the opposite to not to have to worry about something. So things are great. Well, so it's easy to go to bed every night and not worry that much.
So, you know, I mean, there's something to be said there. We just had the story about dementia. My guess is if you don't have to worry while you're asleep, you get more sleep. So yet another reason why the Finns are happy. Let's get to cut two.
This is a woman named Sana.
I think it just means that we can live safely. We have food. We have clean air to breathe. Our kids have access to school. Anybody can get to the highest position in a society. I think those are pretty good ingredients. Nature is accessible. We have every man's rights. Everybody have access to forests and lakes.
So, you know, again, outdoors, you know, there's I've read stories about how there's a lot of young kids, especially in the city, they don't get to go out in nature. They don't get to experience it, you know. And I was just talking about the experience that they see is homeless encampments with tarps and garbage everywhere along the trees, right? That's hardly stress relieving. My guess is if we went through Finland, we would not see that anywhere. So, you know, again, it is true. The poets were right. Nature nourishes the soul, and the Finns have got it going on. So we might not be able to emulate everything, but it probably wouldn't hurt to take a look at the survey and figure out some of the things that are making the Finns happy and seeing if there might be some individual application you could use to make your own life a little happier. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM.